This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop. This is The Big Flip. I'm Ashley Lopez. Something pretty big might happen in Texas politics in a few weeks. What might happen is that Republicans might lose control of the Texas House. This would be the first time in about two decades that Republicans in Texas don't have a complete lock on every branch of government in the state. And there are a lot of reasons why Democrats think this could be the year the GOP trifecta, which is the governor's office, the state Senate, and the state House, could be broken. First, though, Andrew Weber is going to walk us through some of the recent history of Texas politics and what happened the last time control of the state government started to change from one party to another. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Ashley.
So let's start with what we know about Texas politics now.
Right. So the conventional wisdom, as is pretty demonstrated through the last, 20 or so years, is that Texas is a red state. And I know this is something that you know pretty well.
The last time a Democrat won a statewide election of any kind was back in 1994.
Yeah, I think I've done like 10 versions of that story.
Yeah, everybody has. But it's sort of all as far as the sort of genesis of that starts with LBJ.
LBJ, he was the... let me see if I get this right. He was the Texas senator for a while and then became vice president.
Yes, yes. And here he is at the 1960 convention.
And I do, here and now, solicit the votes of every delegate present in this room or the sound of my voice.
So he was trying to get the nomination for the presidency for the Democratic Party of the United States.
Not so successful.
Not successful at all. But... the person who won that, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, picked him to be the VP. So this gave Republicans a shot at that U.S. Senate seat vacated by LBJ. And one of the people who ran for it was a guy named John Tower.
Fellow Texan, I'm John Tower, the only genuine conservative candidate for the United States Senate. I've been asked several times in my travels over the state whether or not I would have any influence with Lyndon Johnson and Sam Rayburn if I am elected. I can assure you that I would have none. But even more important, they would have no influence with me.
It's so crazy how people still run against Washington, almost exactly using this language.
Right, but Tower was kind of unique because he was one of the first dudes to do this and specifically call out the Speaker of the House, who was from Texas, and the Vice President, who was also from Texas, as we've covered, LBJ. But he won, which shocked a lot of people. And it inspired a lot of Republicans to run, both on the national level and in state house races. And one of those people was a 24-year-old teacher from Midland named Tom Craddock.
I was very young. And at that point, the average age of the legislature was probably at least 20 years older than it is today. Okay? And there I was.
So I'm guessing he wasn't, like, totally popular.
Yeah, he was pretty much one of, I think he said, maybe two other Republicans in the state house. And it was not like it is today as far as getting bills passed.
I remember I introduced my first bill to create a district court in Midland. And basically we were like, well, Republicans don't introduce bills, you know, because there were so few of us. And so everybody thought you were kind of an odd person as a Republican and not thought of very well.
Yeah, but it didn't stay this way, obviously, right?
It didn't. And one of the big things, keep in mind, this is late 60s, early 70s-ish, was a scandal called the Sharpstown Scandal.
Ooh, what's that?
It was essentially a developer from Houston was paying lawmakers for preferential treatment, which took the form of laws that benefited his developments. And this was something that a lot of Republicans rallied behind and Democrats did as well.
I can start off by telling you this. I was a part of that group that went in after the Sharpstown scandal. And it was over 76 of us, 77 of us at that time.
Yeah, so that's Sinfronia Thompson, right? She's like that OG Texas Ledge member.
Yes.
Been there for decades at this point.
A group of people that consist of both Democrats and Republicans had formed a reliance among themselves to try to weed out the crime, the corruption that they saw that was existing in the Texas legislature.
So like you heard, that sort of propelled her to run for office. And it was something that, like I said, Republicans sort of gathered around too. And it was this weird sort of bipartisan moment of a kumbaya to make the Texas legislature more ethical and led to a lot of reform. Keep in mind, it's in 72, just before Watergate. But also, there were a handful of lawsuits against the way Texas divided up political districts. And that is another thing that helped Sinfronia Thompson get into office.
The opportunity came about when Ann Richards' husband, Dave Richards, won the lawsuit on single member district. It just happened to be an area that a district was in the area where I lived, was reared, knew a lot of people, and I just thought that I would try it out.
So those decisions benefited Republicans too, because they started grabbing state House and state Senate seats. In 1979, Bill Clements, who was a Republican, was elected governor. He was the first Republican governor at that time in modern history. Bill Clements won again in 1986. Around this time, Tom Craddock, who we talked to earlier, started trying to recruit folks to run in rural areas, raising money for folks.
You need to win a seat in Big Spring or somewhere out in the rural areas, but you couldn't raise any money to run those races. And so what I did is I went into the large cities, Houston, Dallas, and Fort Worth and that, and raised money and had a little brochure put together on who we were going to run and what races and the profile on each of those candidates. And we went out and raised that money, and then we ran ads for them and stuff. And that's how we made huge gains.
Yeah, so the idea here is like Craddock would go to sort of like rich guys in the big cities and be like, hey, adopt this politician who's running for office in this little bitty town over here. And that's how they started winning in some of these rural places. I mean, but did that work? Did that get them any power?
Yes and no. So Republicans were gaining more political power. But at the same time, Ann Richards was elected governor after Bill Clements, and she was elected in 1990. So Texas was purple-ish. And then it all kind of came to a head in 1994.
We worked hard. We ran a good race. We have done a lot of good for Texas. This is not the end of the world. It is the end of a campaign.
Right. So this is when Ann Richards lost her reelection to George W. Bush.
Right.
That was sort of the beginning of his ascendancy to later become the president.
Right. A few years after that, he would become president. And the person who took his place in the governor's mansion was Rick Perry, the longest serving governor in Texas's history. And then a few years later, Republicans took the state Senate. And then in 2002, they finally got the state House.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy that Republicans, like the last thing they were able to take was the House, whereas now it looks like the first place where Democrats can make any gains is in the Texas House.
Right. Right. It's kind of like a top-down versus bottom-up situation.
That was KUT's Andrew Weber. Okay, so that was the last 20 years, but then 2018 happened. That means we have to talk about Beto O'Rourke's Senate run. Let's start at election night. I was actually in El Paso with the O'Rourke campaign, and Mose Bushell was in Austin with the Republicans. Hey, Mose.
Hey, Ashley, how you doing?
So, what was that like?
Well, I was with Greg Abbott and the Republicans downtown Austin. I got some sound from it here. I'll play you a little bit of the background music.
Fun little time capsule.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, generally, it was pretty upbeat. And I don't know, can I just stop that? So, I've covered a fair amount of GOP election night parties, and in Texas, they're often pretty upbeat kind of affairs, right? The Republicans usually do pretty well, at least outside of Travis County. So, we had some Prince playing, and people kind of starting to get loose. There's this bar downtown. But then I noticed after a little while that the whole kind of mood shifted. And at first, I wasn't even sure what was going on. You know, you're kind of scrambling around, trying to get tape, do interviews, call back to the station. But more and more people seem to be not talking, like not drinking, but looking at their cell phones instead. The way I remember it almost, it's like even the music kind of dropped. I know definitely that all the chatter of the crowd went down. People are standing there staring at their phones. And I remember asking this guy, what are you looking at? And he said that they were looking at these returns from suburban areas. I think I want to say it was like outside of Dallas. And that Beto was beating Ted Cruz in these districts that had been really like Republican strongholds, you know, for the last, you know, for recent history, I guess you could say. As you can imagine, you know, these people are starting to think, well, wait a second. If Cruz can lose these districts, he might lose this whole thing.
The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness.
Yeah. And then, like, I remember the kind of inverse situation happening in El Paso. I remember when early voting first came in, that's when numbers started looking really bad for Ted Cruz, was very early on in the night. But yeah, we know how this ends, right? Ted Cruz won. Beto O'Rourke conceded. Yeah. Did the mood at least shift, like, at that point?
The interesting thing about, you know, my memory of that night now is that it did end up, you know, kind of going the way that initially people expected it to. Cruz won. The Republicans maintained a lock on statewide offices in Texas. But that moment still stuck out in my mind, right? That whatever it was, that 20 minutes or however long it was, when there was this kind of fear that I, at least as a reporter, had never really seen the GOP, I'd never really seen expressed at a Republican election night party up until that time.
Yeah, and I gotta say, there's good reason for that to be a scary time for Republicans because, yes, Beto O'Rourke lost, but that same night, Democrats flipped 2 congressional seats and 12, a whopping 12 seats in the Texas House. I wonder if that's something that, like, Republicans even, like, kind of reflected on. Did that seem to scare them, or was it all about the Beto O'Rourke race?
I mean, well, the night of, obviously everyone's still processing the whole thing, and I didn't meet many people after they realized that Cruz had a lock on the Senate seat that necessarily wanted to talk about the kind of larger picture. But I caught up with James Dickey. He was the head of the Republican Party of Texas at that time. He no longer is. And he basically said that he thought there wasn't a lot of cause for concern for the party.
That was with all of the stars aligning about as perfectly as possible for his opposition. And so I hope that the folks who from all over the country put money into Texas trying to buy that election, I hope that they take that lesson to heart, that no, in the most perfect of scenarios, they still lost by high single digits. That is a significant rebuttal.
So anyway, that was my night.
Okay, well, thanks, Mose. Okay, so even though Beto O'Rourke lost that night, because Democrats were so excited and engaged by this very expensive, very highly watched campaign, they were able to flip these 12 House seats. And that was a very unexpectedly good night for Democrats. And Republicans have long said that it was only because of Beto O'Rourke's run, only because there was so much flowing in to that race, that Democrats even came out and they were able to win those seats, and they will not be able to do it again. They call this the Beto effect. Now, I've heard a lot of experts, particularly in the Democratic Party, say this is just flat out wrong.
Beto was a good candidate. He ran a great race.
That's Andrew Reagan with the Texas House Democratic Campaign Committee.
But we saw up and down the ballot, candidates performed better than they had historically, and that there was a lot of voter enthusiasm on the Democratic side. That's something that both in polling and in demographics in these districts has not abated.
When he said these districts, he's talking about these 9 districts in the Texas House that O'Rourke won in 2018 that didn't flip to Democrats. That is, O'Rourke won them, but like the Democrats who was running for that House seat did not win. Now Democrats say they're really gunning for those seats because they're betting this is about more than Beto O'Rourke.
It's hard to really get your finger on the rapid change that's happening in these districts because it's both younger, more diverse, And it's more college educated than the country as a whole. And we've seen that college educated voters specifically have been repelled by both Trump and the Republican Party.
Republicans like Luke Macias don't see it this way. In fact, he says he actually thinks those districts are getting more conservative. Basically, there's nothing to see here.
Republicans are going to hold on to the House because Texans do not want to move our state in the direction of the socialist policies that the Democrat Party has established as their platform moving forward.
Pollsters, by the way, aren't calling this either way. Jim Henson with the Texas Politics Project is super plugged in, and he says he doesn't have any idea whether Democrats are going to pull this off.
I think it's closer than it's been in a long time, you know, at least 10 to 15, you know, at least 10 to 15 years.
Henson says Democrats in Texas just have more momentum, more money. And yes, their voters are just more enthusiastic. Henson says Republicans also have this other thing hovering over them coming into the election. That's the pandemic and the financial crisis that is happening right along with it in Texas.
In the period of Republican hegemony in Texas, Republicans have never really faced any kind of fundamental policy challenge that they had to address or solve. They've had, frankly, a long honeymoon, and that honeymoon is now over. And they're having to do torture the marriage metaphor, but now they're getting to the, you know, the hard work part, and they don't really have much of a model for it.
Tomorrow, we'll talk more about those two decades that Texas Republicans ruled over a growing economy that not even a global financial crisis scarred too badly, and how that actually led to the political reality Republicans are facing now. This is The Big Flip. I'm Ashley Lopez.